Hi, thanks for joining me. This is actually a re-recording of a previously released episode on the Johnson & Johnson one-shot Janssen coronavirus vaccine, which received EUA over the weekend. I originally recorded this on Friday, and I realized that I made a mistake in talking about the reactogenicity, so instead of just doing an update on one segment of it, I'm re-recording the whole thing. So hopefully this will be actually a little shorter, too. So thank you very much for taking a listen. This new vaccine is, again, one shot. It's built on the adenovirus 26, the AD26 platform, which has actually been under development since 2014 when J&J started working on its Ebola vaccine. So to date, more than 194,000 people have been involved in clinical trials to develop that vaccine. It's actually been used to develop vaccines for Ebola, as I mentioned, Zika, HIV, malaria, and RSV. The Ebola vaccine was approved in July of 2020, actually, by the EU. So this is a vaccine that has gone through a 40,000-person clinical trial, and the full report has been published. It was published on Friday. I made it through the first 33 pages. It's pretty long. I will go through the second half, and if there's anything else that needs to be added, I'll stick it on to the end of this episode. But for right now, I'm going to cover efficacy and safety. So the primary efficacy endpoints were development of moderate and severe disease, and they looked at this at 14 and 28 days after vaccination. In order to receive the vaccine or the placebo, the participants had to be negative by PCR and serology on day one. And as I mentioned, the trial was conducted among 40,000 people, split evenly between the two arms, vaccine and placebo. What they found is 66% effectiveness against any disease throughout all of the geographies studied, and this vaccine was trialed not just in the US, but also in South Africa. So that's pretty important because the other vaccines were trialed before the variants became a major player and were not studied specifically in a place where one of the variants that is known to be more transmissible was a factor. So the B1351 comprised 95% of all of the sequenced specimens in South Africa in this particular trial. So the results I'm going to share with you cover all of the locations where the vaccine was trialed. So 66% effectiveness against any disease. So that's the number you would compare to the 95% if you were comparing to Moderna and Pfizer. But again, remember, it's different timing and new variants in the battle here. 77% effective against moderate and severe disease at the 14-day checkpoint, and 85% after 28 days. Two cases required hospitalization after 14 days in the vaccine group compared to 29 cases in the placebo group. No cases required hospitalization in the vaccine group after 28 days. There were 7 deaths in the placebo group and none in the vaccine group. Those over age 60 with comorbidities did seem to have slightly less efficacy, but no hospitalizations after 28 days. The trial did have very good, it seemed like, representative demographics. 20% of people were over age 65, 17% were Black or African American, 45% were Hispanic or Latino, and 40% had at least one comorbidity. The top three were BMI over 30, that was 28%, hypertension was 10%, and type 2 diabetes, 7%. Vaccine efficacy seemed to be higher in the group without comorbidities for the younger age group and the older age group, and the cut point they used here was 60, so it's a little confusing. The older age groups are different for each of the vaccines so far, 65 in Pfizer, I think 55 in Moderna, and 60 here, but it's close enough. So it's not too surprising that efficacy was higher in the group without the comorbidities in both age groups, but the confidence intervals were wider because these were smaller groups, and follow-up was a little shorter for that 28-day checkpoint due to unblinding. So going past 28 days, the confidence intervals widened, the sampled groups got smaller because the unblinding was an option, and people who got the placebo were able to go get a vaccine that already had EUA at that point. So I wouldn't necessarily focus too much on that. One thing I did notice was interesting, if you look at table 13, vaccine efficacy goes down between 14 to 28 days among those with hypertension and diabetes, but again, the confidence intervals are really wide. And in general, it looked like the 28-day point was actually the most solid for efficacy overall. so it may just be small samples. Okay, let's move into safety. Nearly 40% of the patients reported headache and fatigue, and about a third of them reported muscle ache. And this is where I went wrong in my previous recording, if you're listening to this again. I thought I recalled, and I should never work from recall, I thought I recalled 24% of people with fatigue in the other vaccines that had received EUA, but I was wrong. It was upper 40s. So, for fatigue and for headache. So this is a little bit less and certainly not higher. It's in the same ballpark for headache, fatigue, and muscle ache. The side effects were again less among those over age 60. Two things to keep an eye on: thromboembolic events. They were 15 in the vaccine group versus 0 in the placebo group, and tinnitus was 6 versus 0. If you're getting the vaccine and you're just interested in what it should look like, the vaccine should be colorless to slightly yellow and clear to opalescent. It is an intramuscular injection. And if anybody is listening and wants to know what the other inactive ingredients are, it's citric acid monohydrate, trisodium citrate dihydrate, ethanol, let's see if I can get this next one, 2-hydroxypropyl beta cyclodextrin, HBCD, polysorbate 80. I believe that was something that was in the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines as well. So keep an eye on polysorbate 80 if that's something that you have sensitivity to. Sodium chloride, sodium hydroxide, and hydrochloric acid. I did note 3 things that were kind of interesting. I put this in the category of just wondering about this, looking forward to hearing what the people on TWIV say about it when they dig into it. So item number 1, there were only 3. People with no comorbidities were less likely to actually complete their 8-week follow-up. And that was in the younger groups and the older groups, and it was by a fairly striking amount. So I actually expected people who have comorbidities to be more engaged with the follow-up and more interested in maintaining their check-ins. But the people with no comorbidities were actually the ones less likely to complete that follow-up. So I guess smooth sailing, they went on with their busy lives and didn't check back in as often. The second item I noted, if the positivity at the time of vaccination, remember they did serology and PCR testing, it was 10%. I thought that was pretty high. Overall, I mean, obviously it varies tremendously throughout the country, but finding 10% positive among all of those people presenting to enroll in the trial must reflect geographic variation, or potentially that they are in, you know, like some selection bias. They're in positions that they know cause them to have exposure, and they're hoping to actually get the vaccine, and so maybe they're actually more likely to be positive. I don't know. And then the third thing was twice as many people quit the study in the placebo group as the vaccine group. I would have thought if the vaccine caused any problems or concerns that we would see more people drop out, but this is a one-shot vaccine, and so maybe the people in the placebo group were more likely to drop out because they actually wanted one of the vaccines that received EUA, and maybe I did not read if the placebo was saline versus an actual injection of another vaccine. I'm guessing it was saline. So the placebo group may have known that they got the placebo and they disenrolled and went and got a vaccine with the emergency use authorization. That would be my presumption. So anyway, it looks like a great vaccine. You know, single dose, doesn't require being frozen. It can be stored in a refrigerator for 3 months. It's in a 5-dose vial. And it should be a 0.5 mL per dose. This is going to be a great vaccine for people who are interested in convenience, people who kind of, you know, were a little worried about the brand spanking new super ingenious mRNA vaccines. They want something that's been trialed in other vaccines before. This might be interesting for them. That adenovirus 26 platform is a common cold. So it's one shot in the Ebola vaccine. It's actually 2 shots, but 2 different adenoviruses because the body builds immunity. So you can't actually provide a second dose with the same platform because you'll have antibodies to it already and your body won't be able to go through the, it'll basically shut down the immunogenicity too soon. You won't actually get the desired effect. So they have to, in Ebola, they had to use a second vector. So this is just one shot using Ad26, and it's been around, it's been tested before, it's already been developed for Ebola. I'm super excited about that. I remember as a teenager reading The Hot Zone and just being freaked out. So I don't think Ebola gets as much attention as it should as far as the vaccine goes. If you have any questions, drop me a note through ABC Medical Writing. You'll see a contact form there. And I do apologize again for that mistake on the reactogenicity. For some reason, I had 24% drilled into my mind with fatigue, and I can't figure out where that came from. So again, this one looks like it has similar reactogenicity, if anything, a little bit less, and just looks great. Thank you again. Have a great day, and go check out TWIV. I'm sure that the five of them will be pulling up this briefing document and going through it point by point by point, and they will have lots of interesting things to say. So find them at microbe.tv. I absolutely adore them. Been listening for months. I take them out on runs with me, and just can't wait for the next episode. Take care. Thanks.